Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel. Welcome in Josh Norris of the Baseball America podcast family of co-hosts. Josh, your first podcast. I will try very hard to be gentle. You're in Surprise, Arizona. Now, this is your first spring training for us, but you went to spring training several years covering the Yankees AA team for the Trenton, New Jersey newspaper. So what's the difference, first of all, between how big of a difference is spring training in Florida and covering one team and spring training in Arizona trying to hit up many, many teams?
It's really just the scheduling and the weather. Other than that, it's pretty much the same. You go in every morning, you try to get what you can of the lineups and rosters and daily reports and try to prove you're media and not a fan. And when you do that successfully, you're in and you bounce back and forth, trying to get, you know, priority guys.
It feels like, according to JJ just returned from Florida. I feel like this is the first spring where we have actually noticed a negative. There are actual benefits to having to being in the BBWAA that we really probably should try to actually pursue, because when you're in the BBWAA, you go wherever you want to go credential-wise, whereas if you're not, there are some places, even on backfields, where, like you said, you have to prove that you're not a fan.
Oh, no. Yesterday at Indians camp, I got shut out of Indians camp because not only did I need a credential, apparently, but I needed 24 hours notice for the backfields.
Yeah, you need to tell me that next time. That's what I'm for. That's what the editor-in-chief is for. So I can get you that. So
Let me know next time. I'll just watch Reds camp, and then I'll go to Surprise again. So I did.
There you go. That works. That works for me. Plus, not that there's a whole lot of guys you want to see in Indians camp anyway. That's a little dig there. It's a little dig there at Indians camp. But the first question. Now, your first time in Arizona. This is your first time in Arizona since the. Well, you went in the fall league. You were there
right,
for a week. What's your favorite Arizona complex and why?
Well, the new Cubs Park is really good. I especially liked the little drawings of how the Bears have evolved over the years as far as the Cub mascot has gone. Salt River Field is really nice. The Cubs Park is really nice. Surprise is really nice. They're all really nice. I mean, it's hard to pick a loser among the bunch. They're all, you know, obviously within about an hour of each other, so that's really nice, as opposed to Florida, which is, you know, you have to get a different hotel if you're going to different little hubs. But here, it's just, you know, an hour maybe.
Yeah, it's a big difference. It feels like it's a big difference. Well, let's talk about some of the players that you've seen. And, you know, as usual, if you're listening to this podcast, obviously you're listening to it after the fact, but you can always send us email. podcast@baseballamerica.com is the email address. My Twitter is @JohnManuelBA. Josh's is @JNorris427. And I will not be asking you why the number 427 is there. Now, part of the... reason that you and Ben Battle are also in Arizona, with some of the international aspects of the trip. I thought you did a really neat story on kind of the showcase culture, I guess, of Latin American players and how much they're used to it. Just from your standpoint, Josh, of being somebody who, again, most of your experience was covering AA baseball, and really you've seen a lot more amateur baseball since you've come to BA. You know, what's it like just watching a game, a showcase type deal? Like, how different is that from maybe an amateur baseball with, say, college baseball, or just watching a AA game? Just how different is it from your standpoint of watching those guys kind of showcase?
I mean, I was just kind of blown away looking at these kids and knowing that they're 15 and 16 years old. And you can tell they're veterans. They know the drill. When they get onto the 60-yard starting block, they turn, they show their numbers to the scouts, they go. When they go to throw to the outfield, they stand there, they turn, they show their numbers to the scouts, and they throw. It's old hat for them. They don't seem nervous, even though they're 15 years old. And my mind kind of, you know, touched the void a little bit, realizing that when I was 15 years old, if I had been put in front of, you know, 40, 50 guys who control my future, I would have been very, very nervous. And these kids, it doesn't matter. It's a business for them, and there's one singular goal, and if they don't make it, they don't really have backup plans with only a few exceptions.
Right. That's pretty – I thought that stood out in your story, just how routine going through that process has been for a lot of those guys. You also got to see Eloy Jimenez, who's was the highest highest signing bonus of anyone in the international class last year. You saw Jinho Singh with the Cubs, Taiwanese right-hander who was entered the 2013 signing program signing period with a lot of hype. Then had a really bad World Baseball Classic, kind of his stock seemed to dip a little bit, but obviously was good in spring training. What stood out to you about those two guys, especially your look at Singh?
Well, Singh, I mean, I didn't really know much of what to expect, except I really knew his name, and that was about it. And, Ben told me, this is a guy to watch. So I did. And, 94 with ease all the time. The curveball was a real a power pitch, it's a well above average pitch. And the changeup is okay. And the people, scouts, who told me there were a couple scouts that came up to Cubs guys and said, you beat him on us. You beat us on him, know? We missed on this guy. We put too much stock into the World Baseball Classic stuff. So good on you, Cubs. You got another arm. And, Zastrzyzny threw that day, too. And there was a scout there who was just raving about him and said, I'm going to write up a pro report on him tonight. This guy could be in the major leagues by this year. Just loving every bit of Rob Zastrzyzny.
Well, he's an interesting guy because what stands out, Zastrzyzny wasn't a consensus pick. To go in the second round, I believe we had a number 94 on our board on the BA 500. He was not. I don't want to use the word reach, but like I said, he wasn't a consensus pick there because he's not a big velo guy. It doesn't mean that he doesn't throw hard or that he can't, but that's not his MO. But he, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, the reports on him have all been. It's a pretty physical guy who has a now fastball in terms of his ability to use a fastball. Throws it for strikes. You can see future command of the fastball. Has some angle to it. Has some deception to it. He gets swings and misses with the fastball in the strike zone when he's going well. Is that what you saw? Or is that what that scout saw?
Well, I did see swings and misses, but, it's a little hard to gauge swings and misses when you're facing 15-year-olds. But... the point that the scout made to me is he gets unreal extension on the fastball, which makes it play up.
Yeah.
So that's what he liked a lot. And everything about him was really good. I saw him in the fall league too, when they had a special interest squad for Cubs brass. It was him versus Tyler Scalina, and he dominated that day too. So he did it against 15-year-olds and he did it against Cubs prospects.
So your impression has been pretty positive of their first. Those are the first two pitchers the Cubs drafted in 2013. Zastrzyzny in the second round, Scalina in the fourth.
Correct. And Jimenez, what really struck me is he's a very, very big man.
Yeah.
At 17, he's a large human being with very, very good bat speed. He does run a little funny, but he gets down the line, and he was hitting lasers in BP. So. There's a lot to like there, but he's going to make his 2014 debut this year in the AZL. So there's a long way to go, obviously.
Right. I mean, you talked about him as a third baseman. It really just seems like he's going to be too big to be a third baseman. I think that's possible short term, but he just he's a profile right fielder long term, right?
Oh yeah, he's gigantic. He's definitely going to he unless he's outstanding with the glove, which I didn't really notice much. Defensively that he had to do while the 15-year-olds were striking out. He's probably going to be in the corner.
Now the Cubs, obviously there's an organization that, has a lot of, they're in rebuild mode for sure. And a lot of young talent on those backfields. The Rockies, and I mean, you saw the Rockies. I know you saw some minor league camp. You also were at the, big league game at Salt River, which Salt River really is just it's a mockery of a spring training complex because there's just nothing.
Absolutely.
There's nothing spring training about it. It's ridiculous.
Actually, that particular game was at Phoenix Muni.
That's too bad for you. It's Salt River.
No,
is pretty crazy.
I like Phoenix Muni a lot. I'm sad that it's going away. But yeah, I did see John Gray that day.
Well, Phoenix Muni's not going away. It's just going to become the home of the Arizona State Sun Devils. That's what it's becoming.
Right.
So it's not going away. Right. It's just not going to be a spring training complex anymore.
Right.
But yeah. So you saw Jonathan Gray, and you saw him. You saw big stuff, but he was getting turned around that game, correct?
Absolutely. He got up to 99. He only had one strikeout in I think three innings or so, and it was straight enough where people were squaring it. These are major league hit. Well, some of them are major league hitters, and they were squaring him pretty routinely. That was, I don't know if I would, should say I'm concerned about it, because there were parts of it where he was looking like he was working mostly on his slider anyway. But when he threw that fastball, guys like Chris Jimenez were squaring him, and Alden Carrithers squared him.
Yeah, so. those are big league camp guys, and Chris Jimenez has been in the big leagues, but I don't believe Alden Carrithers has been in the major leagues yet. So that is of some concern. I would agree, but at the same time, you know, how good was the off speed stuff? I mean, was it pretty? How much of it did he throw, and what was your impression of it?
If I remember correctly, he threw a lot of sliders, and none of them really kind of blew my doors off. There was reason he's still working on them. Right. It was fringy.
Right. Yeah, he's and obviously it's his first spring training as well for Jonathan Gray. So even after all the accolades of last year, the tremendous college season, you know, it was about really was even earlier. It was late February last year where he really kind of entered the year, I believe, 26 on our college top 100 prospect list and jumped up to 2 by our midseason update. And it was really for what he had done in late February, early March, where he really jumped up on everyone's draft list because he had hit 100 miles an hour in front of a lot of heat out in California. So it was about this time of year, but it's a different kind of schedule that he's preparing for. You know, he wasn't throwing heavily in January to get ready for the college season to start in mid-February. So just a different calendar that all these guys are on. That's one of the big adjustments, obviously, that all college pitchers have to make. We did have one question on Twitter. You said you'd been to Reds camp. I didn't
see Michael Lorenzen.
That was the question. You've anticipated it. I got to see him a little bit in the fall league last year. I'll be fascinated if so. At Fenway Star Card is our Twitter handle for the question there. Who did you see? I think you saw Carlos Contreras in Reds camp. Anybody in Reds camp stand out to you?
I mean, I was really only there for 2 innings for Carlos Contreras, and I knew that the other pitchers were nothing to get excited about. It wasn't Stevenson. So once I saw 2 innings of Contreras, I left. I took some open sides of other guys, but Contreras was really good. He was 92, 94, and the ball was cutting like nobody's business. I mean, the catcher was having trouble handling it. It was cutting so much. Matter of fact, one guy next to me said, you know, this is Mariano Rivera stuff, and then next pitch, he breaks a guy's bat. It was really good. The curveball was it was high 70s, topped at 80. It was a pretty good offering. I didn't see him try to bury it, but he threw it twice where it dropped into the strike zone, and they both took it looking for a called third. But the movement on the fastball is really what stood out. He only walked one guy and in those 2 innings, and those were on 2 of those pitches were close. Huh. So,
you know, like you said, I mean, the Reds are – there's not a lot of pitching depth there. So Carlos Contreras is one of the more important prospects, it feels like, in the Reds organization. You also talked to I brushed over the Rockies. I meant to go back to that. One of the guys that you talked to was David Dahl, and I thought David Dahl was a good point to talk about also on the podcast, just because he's a guy who, you know, entered the 2012 draft with a lot of expectations. Was a little bit of a divisive guy in that year's draft just because he didn't have a huge spring, and actually his season ended in late April. His team wasn't great, so they ended their playoffs in late April. So, you know, scouts didn't get to see as much of him in competition. They did get a lot of workouts basically the whole month of May, worked out for people, that kind of stuff. But then, of course, you know, had a great debut in the Pioneer League, and then really just about as lost a year as he could have had last year between a hamstring injury and a team suspension for missing a flight and all this kind of stuff. And there was rumors about other stuff. When you talk to David Dahl, kind of where's his mind at going into, you know, what really will be his debut season this year as he finally gets to actually play in a full season?
He made it clear that it's 2014 and not 2013 anymore. Right now, when I talked to him, the only thing he was really looking for was consistency, just getting those at-bats back that he missed. He just wants to get on track, turn the page, and every other cliche you can think of, and have a good year, and, you know, put that stock back up where it needs to be. He'll be at Asheville again this year with guys like Ramel Tapia and Ryan McMahon. So he'll have other guys. He doesn't have to be the man on that team. But he's, like you say, he's just looking for a positive start to his second year in pro ball.
I mean, what did he, you know, how much, what did he attribute last year, you know, last year's just the complete failure to, basically? Did he talk about it at all with you, or did he pretty much just try to cliche you into, I'm not here to talk about the past kind of deal?
That was pretty much it. But I thought, you know, he was more concerned about, you know, on the field stuff because of coming back from the actual injury. Once the hamstring injury happened, that was kind of it. He spent the entire rest of the year rehabbing it. He said no surgery, though, but he was rehabbing that, and he's just anxious to go out there and get more ABs.
I mean, that's such a strange story. You just don't have too many prospect stories I can think of that are similar to that. You know, I don't know of too many that are similar to that. Who else stood out to you in Rock's camp that you got to see?
I'm gonna butcher his name, but Yohemdi Himinian.
Yeah, you didn't butcher his name. I think Yohemdi Himinian's right about it. Yeah, he sounded like he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was really good. We were watching that day. It was Blair, and I'm watching him throw 93-95 with a nice little hammer.
Talking about Aaron Blair for the Diamondbacks, you mean, right?
Right.
Okay.
He was on the other side that day. And on the Rockies guy, I was like, all right, let's see what this Rocky guy's going to do. And he's also blowing up 95. So there's another nice arm. He's like number 26, I want to say.
Yeah, 27.
In the handbook. 27 in the handbook. And he was more than holding his own against a much more hyped pitcher. If I remember correct, the changeup was really good too. But it's been a week.
What you tweeted was that it was a very good 74 to 78 mile an hour curveball, 84 to 87 change. You know, just for our listeners, a little background on Yohemdi Himinian. He's a little bit older. 21 years old, turned 21 in October last year. So I guess he pitched the year at 20 in the short season Northwest League, but still hasn't pitched full season ball, even though he signed back in 2010. But this is a guy who, he had 14 wild pitches last year in 83 innings. And it sounds like the raw arm ability are there. He just hasn't put things together in the way that his delivery was described in the prospect handbook is raw, a raw delivery. But the arm strength sounds like it's there, and some quickness, quick hands to be able to spin that breaking ball. And your impression of Aaron Blair, that's another guy. He said like a little bit more hyped. The Blair Pitch Project, one of my favorite headlines that I wrote last year. I think it was Blair Pitch Project leaves Las Vegas for Marshall or something like that. So, not a very usual. And his dad, is a avid listener of Baseball America podcasts and emailer as well. But the whole story on Aaron Blair is pounds the strike zone. Is that another lawnmower behind you there, Josh?
That was another lawnmower. Yes.
Outstanding. It's a live Baseball America podcast. Of course, we're speaking live, but you're not listening live. So you saw Dahl. You also saw Trevor Story, Max White, Ryan McMahon, Domingo Tapia. What was your impression? Just kind of, you've seen a lot of these camps. Was that a better than average BP group? About average? That seems like a better than average BP group that you got to see in Colorado.
Yeah, Trevor Story was kind of interesting. Especially in game, when he had a low pitch, there were points where when the pitch was low, he would get down on one knee. I remember one at bat where he ended kneeling, and I thought, there's no way this can work.
Adrian Beltre does that, but that's about it.
Yeah, you have to be real special. And it didn't work for Trevor that day. Ryan McMahon hit the ball pretty solidly, pretty consistently, and then homered in the game. Max White made hard contact too. It was a nice little BP group. I was, bouncing back and forth pretty constantly trying to get all those guys at once. And Tapia was, he's interesting. He has a really broad base where he puts his feet out real wide, and the swing is almost all upper body. So I don't know what to do with that, but he obviously has earned prospect status, so something must be working right.
Well, it's a heck of a frame. I mean, he looks the part, does he not, when he's standing in there, lean, wiry, athletic?
Yep, all those words apply. He's definitely lean. He's bordering on wiry, and I he looks very athletic. He's definitely a guy you'd look at and say, yeah, this is the kind of body you'd want on a baseball player.
Well, part of the reason, a big part of the reason why you're out there, Josh, is that you're shooting a lot of video for us. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm I was just thinking, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing your video of Domingo Tapia shooting, doing BP, taking batting practice. You know, you started shooting video kind of just basically you started integrating it into your coverage of the Trentonian. Kind of what's your take been on the evolution of baseball and video? Just see, when did you start noticing scouts all using video when they were doing their pro scouting coming through Trenton?
I remember applying with the Blue Jays at one point to being a videographer, and they have videographers everywhere. There was one the other day at Duke for the UVA game, and his whole thing was he was never behind the plate with a radar gun. He was just bouncing back and forth, side to side, getting opens on everybody, as many as he possibly could, and they have them everywhere. And, you know, a guy I spoke to the other day said, you know, it's a rare game where 15 of the 30 clubs don't have a guy with a handy cam there, you know, taking video. It's same idea at the amateur stuff too. There's always guys there. They'll hold, some of them have Velcro on the tops of their radar guns and on the bottom of their camera so they can clip the camera onto the radar gun.
That's
and
smart.
Just hold both at the same time. Yeah, we should think about that.
Well, you can always, imitation's a good form of flattery, so I'd say we should copy that.
And some will, and the MLB guys, the stuff the MLB rolls out are amazing, where they have the big tripod and the camera and the radar gun all integrated into one. And it's kind of, so the radar gun will feed in the speed of the pitch onto the display of the video. So it'll be pitch, and then on the corner you'll see like 98 or whatever. I also saw one guy in the Fall League who'd somehow worked part of a car jumper cable into a video holder that he clipped to the back of a seat.
So basically he was just using the clips was the key part that he was using. He wasn't jumping his camera.
If he was, he wasn't doing it right. But there's everyone has video these days, and it's going that way. Like we saw with the stuff they rolled out at MIT, they have all sorts of new ways to do video analytics now that measure how fast a guy runs, whether his route is efficient, speed to the ball, et cetera. And it's getting to the point where you may as well just stick a homing chip in players, and that would work real well for off the field stuff too. But
Sorry, I'm a little delayed in laughing at that, but that's good.
Okay.
I like the homing. I actually just watched Hunger Games this weekend. I'd never seen that movie, so there's a little. And there's of course there's a chip. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not.
Have you read the books?
I have not.
This is the theme that we will not revisit too much in this podcast. But I mean, there's a pop culture gap. I'm not even that hip. I'm a nerd. And not even in like the cool nerd kind of way. I'm a domestic dad nerd, which is the worst kind of most boring kind of nerd there is. But there's definitely a pop culture gap. I think that you have expertise in certain areas, but I just watched that movie. And they implant chips into the kids' arms before they send them out on their ridiculous quest to kill each other, so they don't go hungry. So for everyone else's entertainment. So I don't think implanting chips has any positive connotations. And you know what? We don't even need to implant chips, Josh. We just give you a cell phone and then we can track you pretty much.
So pretty much.
That's pretty much how it works. But yeah, I mean, that seems like that's what's next. Are you sure they didn't implant any chips in these IPL kids on the tour, Latin American kids touring Arizona? They may have been implanted.
And hold on. Oh, up. On a lawnmower.
Yeah, if there's another spot where you think you might get good reception, you can move away from the lawnmower on your phone there. That might be a good idea, too.
I've moved several times, actually.
Okay. But we got sidetracked here. I'm surprised that it took 20-some minutes for us to get sidetracked. But we got sidetracked. I wasn't even sure which direction to go into next. Well, one other thing I did want to so we asked you about the video part of it, and that's why we've finally really started integrating video into our coverage here at BaseballAmerica.com. But the other part of this, and we also talk about the international stuff. I guess the other part of it really is just take people through kind of for people who haven't been to a backfield, just kind of like what that experience is like. You kind of glossed over it a little bit at the start because I think you assumed that people have maybe have gone to it, but What's it like when you, if you go to a minor league camp day? You were very excited about camp days. What's a camp day, and what is that? Why were you so excited about camp days?
Well, camp days are intra-squad days where you'll just have the Rangers. Let's say take the Rangers. You'll have Hickory facing off against Myrtle Beach. So yesterday I was at Rangers camp and I got Akeem Bostic versus Cole Wiper.
Nice.
Well, I'm sorry, that wasn't a camp day yesterday. Either way, I did get Akeem Bostic and Cole Wiper. And the other day, who did I get in camp? Oh, it was Reds camp day. It was Contreras versus Org Guy. So that wasn't real exciting. But the point being, you get all the players there at once. You get all four levels, and you don't have to worry about, if I'm yesterday with Rangers, I was watching Bostic, but over in Peoria, Alex Gonzalez was throwing. It was like, I missed it. But that doesn't matter because he'll probably be in Myrtle Beach for part of the year this year, and Myrtle Beach comes into Winston-Salem and Carolina, so I wasn't real worried about missing him. But you get to see the lower-level guys, too. Like, I've overloaded on Jairo Barris and Yasin Yurizarry and Michael DeLeon and Jose Almonte over these last couple days. The only thing that is different here, for whatever reason, is they don't seem to all start at the same time. The first day I wanted to do Rockies camp day and then buzz up to somewhere else, and it was at 11 o'clock, which didn't make any sense because I could not get to where I wanted to go by the time that game would have ended. If it had been at 10 o'clock like I was used to in Florida, that would have been perfect. I would have been able to hit three games at once.
There you go. There's one big difference, 1 hour of time difference between Arizona and Florida.
That hasn't been consistent, but at least it was with the Rockies.
Well, you mentioned the Rangers camp and Jairo Barris. I mean, clearly a guy who has been written up. He's gotten more pub than the average 17-year-old or whatever year old he is at BaseballAmerica.com. He was written about a lot more before he signed than the average non-college or high school player here. What was your impression on Jairo Barris? It seems like your impression was he would see the ball and then he would hit the ball very hard.
He's good, man. He can hit the ball really hard. When he's swinging right, it's short, it's quick, and it's really, really pretty. And he did some stuff yesterday where he was down like either 0-2 or 1-2. He worked a walk. I don't want to say he's blown my doors off, but he's getting there. Every time I see him, he manages to poke a ball hard somewhere, and he runs well too.
So he impressed you quite a bit.
Yes.
Anyone else jump out to you at Rangers camp?
Let's see. Oh, who did I see the other day?
That did you see Travis DeMeritt, I believe?
I did see Travis DeMeritt. I got one swing of Travis DeMeritt open side, and he happened to hit a home run on the pitch. So that worked out. He was really good. He wasn't much of a talker, but he's working at second base now, and he's working to get through that. He's the shortstop in high school, and he's been taking reps at second base since instructs. And he said, the hardest part is learning to read the ball off the bat. He's had help from all sorts of all his coaches out here, and he had a little trouble, adjusting to velocity. At the pro level, which is why he struck out so much in the AZL debut, when he's a guy who comes from a background where he walked a lot.
Yep.
In either case, he's ready to have a much bigger year. He's having been spraying the ball all around in camp, and he looked real good.
He's going to make a full season debut. You expect to see him in Hickory this year?
It could be in Hickory. I think it might be in Hickory. Unless something goes really wrong, it's going to be in Hickory. One thing I did notice that wasn't so much a on-the-field standpoint was yesterday I noticed there was a golf cart buzzing around, and it was Ivan Rodriguez shuttling Jorge Alfaro back and forth to and fro to all the places, just kind of taking him under his wing, trying to develop him. Now, I thought that was kind of interesting. You hear all the time about players or former players taking prospects under their wings. That's the first time I've actually seen it, and it was really cool to look at this legendary Hall of Fame catcher sitting there with Jorge Alfaro and just pointing out the finer points of the game to him. I gave
That's
him a business
neat.
Card and he calls me back for the story, but I thought that was really cool regardless.
No, it is. That's pretty awesome, actually. It's a pretty neat deal for Jorge Alfaro. I mean, who could go really... There's several ways that his career could go for the Rangers. I mean, I think it's very conceivable for him to be a future All-Star catcher. It's very conceivable for him to be a future All-Star, say, right fielder. It would be conceivable for him to have a Miguel Olivo kind of career where he has tantalizing tools, but he's an inconsistent receiver. And he's kind of seems like he's near the top of his league every year in the last 2 years in pass balls. So much athleticism and some tremendous throwing arm. There's a lot of raw power. The pitchers I talked to who'd worked with him in the Arizona Fall League spoke pretty highly of him. So I'm kind of a believer in Alfaro, but I know that he has his doubters among the scouts we've talked to as well, just because the edges are pretty rough. But that Rangers camp, I have to imagine, just their philosophy and their approach to acquiring talent is such a high ceiling, high risk, high reward approach. It has to be one of the more fun camps to go to.
Yes, it does, and that there's a reason I've been here 3 days in a row. I was going to get BP of these guys. I hadn't gotten their actual BPs yet for some reason. I was going to do that today, but instead of the camp day that they said they were going to have, they're just off. So I'll just get BPs of the Royals anyway. I still got to get Gasparini, and I want to get Starling BP, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they've got a lot of fun guys, too. Samir Duenas,
yeah,
guys like that.
That camp is a pretty fascinating one. And it's been a long time since I've been to spring training, but it always seemed like the Mariners Padres camp down in Peoria kind of gets tucked away and isn't always at the front of people's minds. But it sounds like you went to go see both those clubs and came away impressed. At least you got to see some BP of DJ Peterson, Hunter Renfro, longtime personal cheese ball who. Now has been is known to the world since he became a first round pick. What was your take on those guys? Those two first round bats, Renfro and Peterson.
Well, DJ, I only got BP of Peterson since he was playing with the Double A group, and then I watched the Low A groups. But he had some really good bat speed, and he's obviously still a little concerned about the facial injury because he was wearing one of those helmets with the extended flap over his cheek.
Right.
He looked really good in BP. I only got very little of Hunter Renfro. As a matter of fact, I got one swing of Hunter Renfro. He did one at bat, and then he ran to first, and I tried to get him again, and I either kept missing him or he didn't take another at bat. Because I remember I'd been talking to Bill Mitchell previously, and he said he wasn't even running earlier in the week. So I was pretty happy that I got him, running down to first, which I got him at 4.38 down to first, if that matters.
It does. I mean, he's a big guy, and he moves pretty well. I mean, that's not blazing, but that's not bad.
No, I was for a guy who hadn't been running earlier in camp, I thought that was pretty good. So like I said, I got that one swing of Renfro, which I guess is super valuable.
sure.
I got a couple swings from Franchy Cordero. That's a big dude. That's a big dude who looks like a baseball player. A big, very pretty swing.
His name is not that of a baseball player. The name Franchy. It's not a baseball player name.
No, but as I was saying to someone the other day, I really wish he were on the Yankees and he got to the big leagues so John Sterling could say his home runs were either a French connection or a French kiss. But I digress.
You do, but I do. I am very interested in besides all the baseball, Josh. How have you been occupying yourself? How have you hit In-N-Out Burger out there, for example?
I have not actually hit In-N-Out. I've gone to Smashburger and I've gone to Whataburger, but I have missed In-N-Out.
Okay, what's your impression? First of all, did you finish those burgers?
Oh, yeah. I made a pick myself yesterday. I hadn't had food for a while, so I went to Smashburger and got a barbecue bacon burger and a milkshake and then had to lay down for a while.
So your Smashburger, what's your Smashburger quick review for this fast, casual dining establishment?
I don't know why they call it Smashburger, but it's very good. They have a lot of options that you can put on your burger. I got cremini mushrooms and sauteed onions or something, and bacon, which, tell Clint I got bacon.
Well, it tells you that our handcrafted burgers are smashed, seared, and seasoned to order. So that's why they call them Smashburger, I suppose.
I had a little restaurant on the first day that I don't know if anybody's heard of. It's called Burger King, and it's supposed to be royalty among the burger chain. I thought Whataburger was really good too. It was, you know, it was much faster, more casual than Smashburger somehow. They brought the napkins to your table for whatever reason. I thought that was kind of interesting. But, I mean, to give you a hint of how I've been occupying myself, I realized this morning that this whole time I haven't even turned on my TV. So it's been videoing and labeling videos and plotting the next day is how I'm going to get X, Y, and Z guy.
Oh, you're keeping busy. That's outstanding. Have you made sure to enter the VA pool?
I have not. I went to do that this morning, and I didn't see a way to enter it. I saw a couple of entries on the little blogspot thing, but I didn't see a bracket or anything.
Upper right-hand corner, 2014 entry form, I believe is what it says. So,
make sure
you do that. When do you return? When are you back in Durham?
Friday.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to having you back. We'll get you some National High School Invitational video next week, obviously. And
yes.
It sounds like you're having a good spring. I'll sign off for you by asking you. I'll ask you one last question. I know you haven't been at Yankees camp. I know you're still following it, tied into that Yankee community. Do you have the Yankee top 30 prospects list for us? Anything that you've read or seen from Yankee spring training that's caught your attention or that made you raise an eyebrow?
I talked to one of their guys the other day, and it sounds like their Charleston club, I mean, I already thought it was going to be interesting, but I think it's going to be even more interesting. From what I hear, their third baseman is going to be Miguel Andujar, a 17 or 18-year-old kid who's just destroying, who did really well at the GCL in his second turn, and their shortstop is going to be Abiatal Avellino, another guy in the GCL who did really well. It's going to be a really young left side of the infield. And that means Eric Jagielo is going to be at Tampa, which I'm surprised, but you're not because you win that bet.
See, I just did not even remember that bet. I'm
not one to welch on a bet.
Okay. I knew that was, I knew there was something going on there, but I really did not. I just did not. I don't remember. I knew we talked about it. I remember discussing it. I don't remember that being a bet. So I'll look forward to a Williams Kitchen burger from you upon your return.
Okay.
I won't hold you to that. But
you should.
Hmm.
You should.
I can't. I won't go hungry if I forget. But I do appreciate you mentioning it. But yeah, that I mean, it really does seem like that's the. Has to be the story. Well, not has to be. That's one of the stories, obviously, to watch with the Yankees' farms going forward. I mean, their year as a farm system can't be worse than last year, can it?
Well, I mean, it could, but it'd be hard to do. And another guy that they mentioned was the guy that came up in Ben's DSL Top 20, Wagner Mateo. He's a shortstop with true 80 speed. I think he stole 57 bags last year in the DSL, which is kind of absurd. He's got developing power, and you know, every time I talked to a Yankees official for their 30, that guy came up as a sleeper. And you know, I bordered on putting him as my number 31 or 30 guy, but I thought, you know, he's in the DSL. That's really, really, really aggressive. There's a guy named Simone De La Rosa who's hitting upper 90s. There's another guy named Manolo Reyes who's doing the same thing. So there's a lot to look at the bottom part of their system. Not so much at the top, but the bottom is very nice.
Well, out of those full season guys who struggled last year, and there were many of them, which one is your pick to click to bounce back this year? Would it be Ben Wellos because of the Tommy John? Would it be Mason Williams, Tyler Austin? I know you like Ramon Flores. Would you pick one guy that you think is the most likely guy out of that group to become a major league regular?
God, if he'll ever get on the field, Slade Heathcott would be that guy. I can't recall him getting on the field for a game yet this spring, so I can't imagine he's not going to start anywhere but the DL. Mason Williams is probably the guy, just because he's the most athletic, and his stuff last year was, a lot of it seemed like it was mental. I think once he gets his head correct, and I know he dealt with, I think, mono too, if he told me in the fall, that he still has the tools to be an excellent everyday major leaguer. I don't know if that's in New York because they have this Ellsbury fellow and this Gardner fellow.
Right.
They've signed for a while. But if they get themselves reacquainted with success, then they're excellent trade pieces.
Yeah, Mason Williams would be my pick as well, just because he has those survival skills. You know, he does run. He can really defend. And I think I think he has the hand. I think he has the hands and the hand eye. I think he should be able to be at least a solid offensive player. I don't know if he'll be a star level offensive player eventually, but he has the tools to survive in the minor leagues and help teams win while he figures out the bat part. So he's the guy that I'm the most confident in. I don't share your confidence in Slade Heathcott. I mean, I know it's leavened with a very heavy dose of skepticism of his ability to stay healthy. I get it, but just very hard to find guys with his profile who've succeeded, you know, over the course of their careers. So
sure.
I have my doubts, but good stuff, Josh. We managed to steer clear of any craziness in your first podcast, and there were no nicknames. Your nickname was not used, and if you try to use it now, I'll edit it out. So, well done.
I'm a professional.
I never doubt that about you, so I'm not surprised, but I'm somewhat. I thought you would try to work in a third person reference here or there, so. I'm glad you didn't do it.
It's to do with person, but
it was a smashing debut. Well done. So be safe out there on the roads. There are a lot of crazy people on the roads, and look forward to getting you back in here. And I hope you've had a good time out there.
I have indeed, and I'm very sad to leave tomorrow, but it just makes me look forward to the fall league.
Like you tweeted, 15 more days till major league games start. Only a little bit after that for minor league games. We're going to unleash a lot of Josh Norris during the minor league season for those of you who are listening here. But you're going to see a lot of bylines, daily minor league coverage, a lot of video. We only got a sneak peek at Josh during the season last year in August. And just that peek got me very excited for what we're going to see this year. So really looking forward to what you're going to contribute to our coverage in season in 2014 at Baseball America. So good stuff. Thanks for taking time with me on the podcast today. And welcome to the rotation. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
All right, for Josh Norris, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time at baseballamerica.com. So long, everybody.